Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skyla Jeremias. July 2023, the moment the entire U.S. biosimilar industry has been waiting for. This month, 8 adalimumab biosimilars will launch on the market, and as of this recording, 7 have made their market debut. This represents the most biosimilars to launch in a single month, and adalimumab is officially the drug class with the highest number of biosimilar options. These drugs all reference Humira, one of the most profitable drugs in the world, largely because it has 11 indications across the rheumatology, dermatology, immunology, and gastroenterology, or GI, spaces. In particular, adalimumab biosimilars open the doors for massive savings for patients with inflammatory bowel disease, known as IBD, an umbrella term for Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. However, like other treatment spaces, the GI space must overcome misconceptions and misinformation regarding the safety and efficacy of IBD biosimilars, highlighting the need for more education resources for patients and providers alike. Today, I'm joined by Laura Wingate, Executive Vice President of Education Support and Advocacy at the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. She has been working with the foundation for over 16 years and has seen the market transform before her eyes as more gastrointestinal biosimilars enter the market. She is passionate about expanding access to IBD treatments and raising awareness about the emergence of IBD biosimilars, as well as their benefits and savings potentials. Welcome, Laura. To start us off, nearly 45% of patients with IBD in a recent survey have reported concerns about switching from an originator to a biosimilar. How can healthcare providers address patient hesitancy and improve confidence in biosimilars for chronic gastrointestinal conditions?
I strongly encourage healthcare professionals to take the time to sit down and talk about biosimilars and do that in advance of even having to discuss a change in medication with the patient. The more that we can get biosimilars as being part of the treatment paradigm, and when you talk about the treatment options, you talk about biologics and biosimilars simultaneously. I also think having the advanced conversations and leveraging the resources of not-for-profits like the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, like the FDA's resources, can be really beneficial because we know healthcare professionals have very limited time. So there's a lot of great resources out there. There's short format videos that can explain interchangeability, extrapolation, and all these really complex things in easy to understand terms for patients. And then a provider can send a patient to these resources and then have a really engaged conversation after the patient's learned a little bit about biosimilars and become more comfortable with the terminology and then can make a shared decision on the best treatment for them.
Now, when constructing patient-targeted education material about biosimilars for IBD, what information do you feel is the most important to include? And what should people keep in mind when constructing such materials?
I think the most important thing and the thing we've heard consistently from patients and caregivers is they want to hear from other patients and caregivers. And they want their physician to give them the information. So storytelling is really important. And sharing that someone was able to move from their originator product onto a biosimilar is really important. And the other thing is keeping in mind the patient's health literacy and making sure that we're not talking in jargon and terminology that we may say extrapolation, but then put it into really concrete terms for a patient and explain what interchangeability is in a way that a patient's going to understand. This means your pharmacist can substitute it automatically. That makes it easier for you, just like your generic gets substituted at the pharmacy. And putting it into reference terms for patients is really important. And reinforcing that education shouldn't just be done once. It needs to be enforced over time and make people feel comfortable and confident in the decisions that they're making with their healthcare professional team.
Do you think we will see more gastroenterologists switch patients from Humira to an adalimumab biosimilar in the years to come as more data on the safety of switching is published? Or do you think these products will continue to be reserved for treatment-naive patients?
My hope is that these products are not reserved for treatment IU patients. And I think the data is really strong in supporting switching. We just need to do more education to healthcare professionals at all levels, letting them know and understand the data. But I am optimistic that more biosimilars will be prescribed over time. And just like the generic market took time for people to get comfortable with generic drugs, I believe a similar pattern, although I hope a shorter pattern, can be seen with the biosimilars.
Now, of course, the big topic these days is that 8 adalimumab biosimilars in total have launched on the market since the start of 2023. Are clinicians worried about having this many adalimumab options on the market right now? And what strategies can they utilize to adequately manage the stocking and prescribing of so many versions of the same drug?
So I haven't heard that physicians are concerned about having so many options, because the reality is their insurance, the patient's insurance, is going to really dictate what options are available. I think maybe for infusion centers and other groups that have to stock multiple biosimilars and biologics, that might be more of an issue. I do think that education is important, though, for the healthcare professional, and understanding all the different options and that, you know, the different names and the suffix at the end of the names. You know, that's important for the healthcare professional to know, a little less important for the patient to know. They just need to understand that these are safe and effective drugs, and that their physician believes in them. And if we can get the physicians educated and the patients and the physicians communicating, I am optimistic that the biosimilar market will begin to expand and move forward in a really meaningful way and increase access for everyone.
Additionally, only one adalimumab biosimilar so far has an interchangeability designation, which you mentioned earlier. Do you think this label is going to impact adoption rates for adalimumab products?
I do think there are going to be some physicians that are more comfortable with an interchangeable biosimilar. Many physicians have said, I really would like to know that there was a study in inflammatory bowel disease, which is the disease state that I work in. And so I do think there are going to be physicians that are more comfortable prescribing an interchangeable biosimilar. Again, I think it comes back to education. We need to really emphasize that, yes, interchangeables did the extra step. They did the extra clinical trial. They got that interchangeable status, and that means we can substitute automatically. But all biosimilars are FDA approved. They're safe. Their immunogenicities and other concerns that maybe people had in 2015 have really been proven not to take place, that you can switch from one biosimilar to another. Patients are going to be stable. And we need to help physicians understand the nocebo effect and their role in helping patients transition well to a biosimilar, so we can really avoid that it's not working because they got a letter from their insurance carrier, rather than having a conversation with their healthcare professional and making a smooth, educated transition.
How can clinicians work with payers and pharmacy benefit managers to expand access to biosimilars for IBD?
I think physicians need to be prescribing them first and foremost. And, you know, I would love to see payers and PBMs really work to do the education to the patients, so that we don't see letters being sent a few weeks before a major switch happens for a patient, because I've seen the impact of that. And so working with physicians and organizations like the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation to really leverage those education materials and help the patients and the providers, I think we'll see that uptake. Again, it really comes down to there's hesitancy because this is new and it's complex. And if we can remove the complexity and level set with both the healthcare community and the patient community, then we can really move things forward. And I'd love to see payers and PBMs have a better pricing and not put weird formulary designs in where you have to step through with the originator to get to a biosimilar. That really doesn't make sense. So I'd love to see PBM reform and formularies that really reflect the evidence that supports these drugs being equal and available to the patient.
What are some legislative initiatives that clinicians should keep an eye on and advocate for regarding biosimilars in the gastrointestinal space?
First and foremost, PBM reform and really getting equality across the biosimilars and access. That's what they were designed to do. And keep an eye out on FDA reform as well, because there may be some efforts to engage the FDA and making it even speedier and easier for people to understand biosimilars and increase access to biosimilars. So those are really the efforts I would encourage the physician community to be engaged on and advocating to increase access. So any bill that's going to help increase access and move biosimilars into the market will ultimately lower cost and get biosimilars in the hands of maybe patients that didn't have them in the past, people in inner cities and rural communities that maybe they just didn't have access. And now these drugs are more affordable or should be more affordable. Anything that can lower the cost and increase access, I would encourage our healthcare professionals to be engaged on.
Some surveys have shown that gastroenterologists are more likely than rheumatologists and dermatologists to use adalimumab biosimilars. However, most studies for these products have only been conducted in rheumatology settings, particularly rheumatoid arthritis. How do gastroenterologists feel about biosimilars for IBD? And are there concerns about extrapolated indications?
So if you had asked me this question in 2015, I would have said the majority of the gastroenterology community had concerns. They wanted to see more switching studies. They wanted to see more evidence ensuring that a patient wasn't going to fail their drug because they were switched onto a biosimilar. What I can say has happened over time, and we have a position statement on biosimilars that has evolved as the evidence around biosimilars has evolved. And the physician community, the gastroenterologists that are engaged with us have become more comfortable with biosimilars as the evidence has come out on multiple switch studies and that they haven't seen patients have immunogenicity, the evidence supporting that if we educate patients, we can avoid the nocebo effect. So all of these things are helping the community become more comfortable with biosimilars. I do still think there are gastroenterologists that will prefer the interchangeables because of that extra study that took place in inflammatory bowel disease. But through education, I do think we can move people forward and overcome anyone who's still hesitant and concerned about extrapolation. I haven't heard those concerns in a while, so I'm hoping they're going away as we become more sophisticated with biosimilars.
What are some initiatives that the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation is working on to boost biosimilar uptake and awareness of these lower cost options?
So we are engaging in education on multiple fronts. So we have professional education, really diving deep into the evidence supporting these biosimilars and helping people understand and giving them the tools to help educate their patients. On the other side, we're educating the patients and the caregivers about biosimilars, telling those stories of switches and changes and really helping patients know that others have gone through this, been very successful, been very healthy, and remain stable on their drug. And then we're doing a lot in social media to raise awareness, make sure that patients know that all these new biosimilars came out just this month. So if you look at the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation social media page, you'll see a lot of information. And a lot of what we've done for both professionals and patients is short format, educating on specific topics in short soundbite education, in video format, explaining the molecules and that they're the same with minor variations and non-active ingredients. So I'm hoping and I'm optimistic, and I've seen this through our patients, when we educate them, they come in with one perception, they leave the education with a different one and much more comfortable talking to their healthcare professional about biosimilars. So multi-pronged approach and an ongoing effort.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts or things you want to bring up that we haven't already discussed?
Sure. So I would encourage any gastroenterologists and any patients and caregivers to visit the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation's website. We have biosimilar pages for both audiences, professional and patient, and you can find us at crohnscolitisfoundation.org and then look for biosimilars on our website, and you'll find position statements, videos, fact sheets, all kinds of information that can help educate the patients and make that transition smoothly.
Well, Laura, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information on everything we discussed today in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.